Yeah.
Like,
oh God, that's such a good bar. I agree.
Like, don't come in and be like, no, you can't do that without being giving an alternative. Yeah. And it really frustrates me when people do that to me.
My friends will moan about a booking, a reservation, and then when it comes to, all right, where should we go?
Yeah.
They don't offer any solution.
Don't come then, babes. Don't come.
Hi guys, welcome to What My Best Friend Does, where we talk about what your best friends do so you don't have to. Today, I'm joined by my best friend, the podcast producer, Amy. Amy, how you doing? Welcome to the pod.
I'm very good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing very, very well. We like to start off with a little bit of an icebreaker. When you were younger, what did you want to be growing up?
I think just young forever. I don't think I had any real ambition as a kid.
Okay.
Maybe it would have been something like an actor or a dancer.
You wanted to be an actor, you wanted to be a dancer. You've ended up as a podcast producer.
Yeah.
Talk us through your journey to this point and how you've come to where you are.
I mean, to be fair, I did try to be a dancer.
Okay.
I was
okay.
A dancer for a bit. And then I busted my leg in an audition. So instead of going to dance college, I went to uni.
Okay.
And at the time, I was like, this is devastating. This is, you know.
So you didn't enjoy uni?
Oh, no, I did enjoy uni, okay. But, you know, like in the bit after I realised I wasn't going to get to go to dance college, I was like, oh, this is bad.
It's like the male equivalent is getting injured, so you can't make it as a footballer, isn't
exactly.
it?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And I guess it's the same sort of odds.
Yeah.
Probably similar odds, yeah. Like, and the, you know, the dance college is like academy.
Yeah.
I didn't even make it to academy, I got injured before then. So, I went to uni and I didn't really know what I wanted to do.
What did you study?
English and drama.
Okay.
And went through clearing to go to uni because on results day, it didn't quite go to plan. It happens.
I hear you.
So went through clearing, picked a random uni. I was like, this'll do. And I can't say that I loved doing my undergrad.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of like smart people who loved reading books. Turns out I didn't love reading books that much. But I still had a great time. Mm-hmm. Like social life, you know, I was in Birmingham. It was really fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, while I was in Birmingham, I can't remember how this happened now. Gosh, I met a girl who was running a dance audition. I must have met her at a dance class.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went along to her dance audition and then like got into her troupe. Okay. And then from my second year of uni, on my weekends, I was dancing.
Yeah.
We would do like festivals and like nightclubs. We did gigs abroad. It was really fun. And then I did that after I finished uni. And then it was like the 2008 recession.
Oh.
Like really giving my age up here.
Yeah. Sorry. I don't know why I'm laughing, by the way.
That's like, yeah. 23. Then like the work started to like really dry up because, you know, a lot of clients were like, well, this is not an extra necessity for our event. So then I decided I was going to go back to uni and got a place to study broadcast journalism.
Oh.
Again, something random I picked off the page. I was like, that might be fun.
Okay.
This will buy me some time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I did it and I loved it. Like day one, I already knew I was going to love it.
Yeah.
I was the only person on the master's course who had not done any radio or TV before.
Okay.
And so I felt like an underdog. And that for me, that's me in. Okay. Like, fine. I'm going to prove to all of you people. It felt like it was the thing I was meant to do. It's such a weird, like, airy fairy thing to say.
Can I just take a step back?
Go on.
Why did you decide to do a master's?
Because there were no jobs.
Okay, so it was just like no jobs. So let's get a higher qualification.
I'd applied for like a few weird jobs in like sales and recruitment because I felt like.
You can earn good money.
Not even that. I didn't even think about the money. I think I was just like, they do big recruitment drives for students.
Mm-hmm.
And so like I made my mum buy me a suit. A suit.
Oh, okay.
And went along to all of these like recruitment day things. And you'd get to like interview number 8 and you'd have to go into London. And I was like really enthusiastic. I'm enthusiastic about a lot of things. And so I was temping at the time. And one day I was in the car and I heard a radio advert in the car, ironically, for... And this was like... it was August, September time at this point, and there was a university that was about an hour and a half from my parents' house, and they were still accepting students through clearing and for master's courses. Mm-hmm. And I got into my temp job, and I said to my boss, I was like, oh, I might just have a look. She was like, yeah, do it, have a look. Mm. And I looked, and then I had a call with the course director. Oh, no, I had a call with someone else, first of all, and she said, oh, your undergraduate, I got a 2-2.
A Desmond. I hear it.
And I was sad for myself about that, but, you know, I thought, there's nothing I can do about it. Mm. And she was like, oh, you have got a Desmond, unfortunately. We don't take people under a 2-1, but let me just put you through to the course director. Mm-hmm. And I had a chat with the course director, and she was like, you sound really great. Come in for an interview. And then I had to go, this is so funny. I went in for this interview, and there was loads of questions like, who's the Chancellor of the Exchequer? And I had no idea.
Yeah.
I had no idea about politics. To be honest, I don't think I could tell you who it is now. I had to answer all these really difficult politics questions that I didn't really know, and they still took me. And then they did a thing where you could, interviewed people.
Okay.
They picked two people on the course to pay their tuition fees. And I did the interview and I got picked for that as well.
Wow.
So all of the things felt like it was meant to be.
Yeah, I hear that.
I was lucky. Yeah.
And then you said day one, you knew that this is where you were meant to be.
I was loving it. Like they were like, in the first couple of weeks, it was like, here's how to use a camera. Take it out and shoot something.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to shoot a news report. And everyone was paired up.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have a partner for some reason. My partner was sick or lived somewhere else. Can't remember. I ended up doing it on my own. And it was November, because I remember going to like a Remembrance Day ceremony and shooting like a piece to camera by myself, having never done this before, in front of like a church.
Mm.
And then cutting it all together. And then I watched it back against everyone else's, and my lecturer was like, this is really good, well done. And I was like, it is good, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I mean, it's like, I'm sure if I watched it back now, I'd be absolutely horrified.
Yeah.
But for like a first attempt, I think I just got where things needed to go. It was like mm-hmm. a puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, making audio, I knew how things needed to sound, probably because I've listened to loads of radio growing up. So yeah, I was like, wow, this is it. This is my thing. I finally found it.
So how long does the master's course take?
It takes a bit longer than usual.
Yeah, that doesn't matter. At least it's not about the destination, it's about the journey. So
yeah, to be fair. So we had like a year of like learning, okay. like normal term, like September to May. But in like the March, April time, we were sent off to go and find a work placement. And I started on my work placement with a guy called Sam. And then he was like, can you stay and we'll pay you? And I was like, all right. So I just didn't go back to uni after that.
Wow.
But we still had another year to do our dissertation.
Okay.
So I just then got a job and then I did my dissertation, obviously like the night before it was due in. And then my computer bugged out and deleted the whole project.
Classic.
It's obvious. It's always going to happen.
Yeah.
So then I got like a month extension or something to do it again. And then again, obviously, I left it until the last minute to do. And then I did it. It sounds like a brag. Sorry if to people listening to this be like, oh, yeah, I can do that and get away with it. You can't. Don't do it.
Yeah.
It's bad.
Yeah, don't do that.
Don't do it. Basically, overall, it was just, I think, just under 2 years.
Okay.
But 1 year at uni and then 1 year was like,
working.
You had a year to do the dissertation.
So basically, and by the time you come out, you already had your first job?
Well, sort of, because we had to do this placement thing mm-hmm. and it was meant to be 5 weeks, but I did like days dotted over different times when they needed help.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of those weeks, or maybe it was 2 weeks, I can't remember. Anyway, I ended up there the whole summer and I'd started in like the March, April time and I ended up there until the end of the summer.
Okay.
And I got paid for it, so that was nice.
Mm-hmm.
I decided that I moved back to my mum and dad's house and I took on reading weekend bulletins at my local radio station.
Okay.
Don't do it in your hometown because everyone you know will take the mick out of you.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did that for a bit as well.
Okay. And then, so that's early in your career.
Yeah.
Talk us through the next phase and up into now. Just very briefly.
So like from there, I got a job at the BBC in Birmingham again, reading their evening bulletins. Like, you've got to start somewhere.
On the radio?
On the radio, okay. Yeah. I quite liked reading the bulletins, actually. It was quite fun. And then from there, I worked my way into being a reporter and being a producer. But in the background, I was making all of these documentaries for Radio 1 and 1 Extra through independent production companies.
Wow.
And then I loved doing that. Like, on the first day of uni, when we were doing the masters, they went round in a circle. It was like, where does everyone want to work? Like, what's the dream? And everyone was like, Sky News, BBC News. And I was like, 1 Extra. And everyone was like, why are you on a news course? And I was like,
yeah.
So then from the when I worked at the BBC in Birmingham, then a job came up at an independent production company to make 1 Extra shows. Mm-hmm. And Sam, the guy who'd originally given me all that work experience, had sent it to me and was like, this job has got your name on it.
Yeah.
And sent it to me, and I keep going to say auditioned. I interviewed for that job and I got it, mm-hmm, for this production company. And then I stayed there for like 7 or 8 years.
Okay, well.
And from there, I made programs for Radio 1, 1 Extra, Asian Network, Radio 2. I did TV stuff. I worked on like The Voice and a few other like TV programs.
And like the range of job titles you held, would we just call it producer?
Always producer. And then I was an exec producer, yeah. So I exec produced all of the Radio 1, 1 Extra and Asian Network output from that independent production company.
Amazing. What is the difference between a producer and an exec producer?
The producer is the person like hands-on doing all the work.
Mm-hmm.
and the exec producer is... In terms of radio, because it differs across different industries,
okay,
but in terms of this particular role, I was the person liaising with the client, which in this case was the BBC,
mm-hmm,
and then like working with the producer and the production teams to like make the shows as, you know, as best as they can possibly be, while also like making sure they kind of fit in line with each other, with the expectations of the contract, with the expectations of the audience, and then helping to manage the talent as well.
And an exec producer?
That's the exec producer.
Oh, that's the exec. Sorry. Sorry, because that sounded like everything, which is what you said the producer was.
The producer is like doing the creative, the day-to-day, like basically like making the show.
Okay.
So I was a producer there. That was my first role. And I did that maybe for like 3 or 4 years, and then I became an exec.
Okay.
And then moved on to doing some other projects, like digital stuff.
And has it always been, obviously I've introduced you as like a podcast producer, has it always been audio, or has it been in the visual realm as well?
I still do kind of digital stuff as well.
Mm-hmm.
So after I left that production company, I was freelance, and I was booked to produce a big podcast series.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like my first gig. And then I was also working on a big ITV TV show, like entertainment television show. And I am basically in those roles like a talent producer.
Okay.
So we would do digital content, and I would effectively get the presenters of the show and the digital presenter and the contestants on the show,
mm-hmm,
to do what we needed them to do.
Okay.
Hey, I'm going to put you here and here's what's going to happen. Like, that would be my role.
That brings us to today.
Yeah.
Now you run your own business.
Yeah, with my lovely friend Dan.
Okay.
And so sort of nearly two years ago, he was looking to go freelance from his job. He was the managing director of a digital radio station called Worldwide FM.
Mm-hmm.
And we went for dinner and he said, I'd love to have my own production company. And I said, I'll be honest, Dan, I've never wanted my own production. Sounds like too much hard work.
Yeah.
I'd been freelance at this point for sort of nearly three years. And he's like, no, maybe we should do it. Maybe we should do it. And I was like, yeah, maybe I would do it with you, maybe.
Hmm.
And so then that's kind of how it happened. So we've spent the last couple of years, well, we sort of set up officially at the beginning of last year, like kind of forging what is the niche of our production company, what do we like to do,
mm-hmm,
what sorts of people do we want to work with, what sort of content do we want to make, what difference do we want to make in the world.
And what is it that your company produces?
Mostly podcasts.
Okay.
But a lot of the time with all the other bits that go alongside a podcast, as you know, like digital content and like having studio facility, and we do everything from like conception of an idea right through to, you know, delivery onto podcast platforms and like reporting numbers and helping to then to develop the next series or the next thing. So
amazing. She'll be helping me one day. She's already helping me, actually. Sorry. Whoops. No, this is amazing. There's been so much there to unpack. I suppose my first question is, you know, you've spoken about doing stuff from inception all the way through. For the listener, are you able to share some of the clients who you've worked with?
So there's some stuff, actually, that comes to me. Like, they've done the first series, mm-hmm. and then they're like, we're going to try a different approach.
Yeah.
And so it'll come to me as like a second. I took on the Love Island podcast in the second series for ITV. And
I used to listen to that.
Yeah, but we don't anymore.
No.
I'm joking.
Is it After Sun? That's the one in the
studio. After Sun's the TV show. But then, the Morning After is the podcast. Yeah. So I did series 2, 3, and 4 of The Morning After. So it was, we did summer 2019.
So that was Kem, right?
Yeah. So when Kem came in full time, that's when I took it on.
Yeah.
So summer 2019, winter 2020. So literally pre-pandemic. Oh. And then summer 2021. Those were the three series that I did. Okay. Yeah.
Can I just say something? I'm convinced that they film it the night of the episode and then they air it as the morning after. Can I just say that's how it appeared to me?
Yeah, that is how it's done.
That's how it's done.
Yeah.
So, but they would speak as if it's the morning.
Well, yeah, because it's called The Morning After. So we talk about last night's episode.
Okay.
Because the episode would go live at like 5 a.m. for like early risers.
This is true.
Because some people watch Love Island, go to bed, get up in the morning, hit the gym, want something to listen to.
That makes complete
sense. So we would record, so we'd watch the show together. We'd record immediately afterwards. So the show would finish at like 10.
So it's like fresh in the mind, right?
Well, I've already watched the episode 3 times in the day.
Oh, wow.
Twice, sometimes 3 times. So I would work, she was my assistant producer, but she was definitely a producer. Mm-hmm. And we would work together and write the script in the day, like work out the format of what we were going to talk about. And we would come up with like little games and other stuff in the daytime. Then we would all watch the episode together at 9 when the rest of the country does with the guest. And then we go straight into the studio and record the episode. Mm-hmm. They would all go home. We would stay, do the edit, do the mix with an engineer, and then turn it over. Then the engineer would go home. Then we would write the description and then upload it. So we would probably get out of work. The earliest I ever got out was sort of 1 a.m.
Bloody hell.
Yeah, it was quite savage because it's 6 nights a week for 8 weeks. So you've got to be prepared to have absolutely zero life.
And then they want to do that 2 times a year now as well.
So there was a plan to do it 2 times a year because we did winter 2020.
Yeah.
Then obviously summer 2020 got cancelled because of COVID.
Yeah.
So we would have ended up. I did summer 2019 into winter 2020. Yeah. So it was only a short gap.
That's like half a year.
Yeah, it's big. And also there's like a couple of months of prep for each series as well.
So you know, you've spoken about it there briefly. Having to come up with something like the day of every day, like how do you do that as a creative producer?
The work's already really done for you by the production of the show.
Okay.
Like, so we would normally, with something like that, you sort of start where it left off.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's the biggest cliffhanger? What was the biggest thing that happened? That's where you'll start your episode with, because that's the thing that people are sort of gagging to talk about.
Yeah.
And then, we'd always have things up our sleeves as well. Like, we would always know what guests were going to be on that night. So we'd make things around the guests in advance, like plan silly things, like write silly jokes into the scripts for Kem and Ariel. The only bits that were scripted were the intros and outros. And then the rest of it would be discussion points with notes for them. Because obviously we've seen the episode by that time we've seen it 3 times. Mm-hmm. So
it is organic conversation.
It's all organic.
You're just pushing them in the right, in a direction. Like, well, these are the points you want to hit.
I would be like, we need to talk about this couple. Mm-hmm. And then I think we should talk about this couple. And then we're going to go through the results of this game and talk about some of the silly bits. And then actually we're going to give that game a go. Mm-hmm. Like, but we're going to play it with, you know.
Okay, so there wasn't like, you weren't creating games from scratch.
Yeah, sometimes we would.
And then like, so when you're creating your own games and stuff, was there like a framework you followed? Like, there was this on the episode mixed with this potential list of ideas equals this game for tonight's show.
Yeah, sometimes. I think a lot of the time we'd be like, how could you play this game in audio? How could you make this work? Mm. Mostly like you want it to be like lighthearted and fun. Like when you're doing a podcast like that and it's every day, you want to be able to finish on like a high, particularly because it's aimed at people listening in the morning.
Yeah.
So if they're like in the gym or on their way to work, you want to get them like literally bouncing into work, you know, that in a good mood. And there are sometimes on those shows, there are difficult things to talk about. So I think it was important for us to make sure that we always ended on something high, or we try and always end on like a silly, basically.
Yeah. Okay.
Similar to like news, right? So when I first was reading news bulletins, you start with the most serious story, like the most pressing thing. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I remember once reading a story about a man who was caught in Birmingham Airport with a monkey down his trousers. So that's like, I took that ethos. So I've learned something everywhere, you know, took that ethos that I knew from news, like, finish on a high,
and you incorporate,
and I put that in there, yeah. And I do that for a lot of things as well. Like a lot of the podcasts that I make, I've got sometimes quite serious topic. Mm-hmm. How is a way that we can end this podcast every single time on a positive?
Mm-hmm. So you've kind of touched upon it there with Love Island, but in your job as a creative producer, what would you say a typical day and week looks like for yourself?
I mean, there's no real typical because everything is always moving parts, but. We would be in the studio, our studio, like half studio, half office. It's okay. Really nice. We're still a small business. It's a little sort of cozy space. We'll head in normally in the morning. Myself and Dan will have a chat about like what have we got on today, what edits have we got to get out the door, what records have we got coming up that we need to prep for. Does the talent have the script? You know, do we need to chase this person about this thing that we were talking about? All that thing's just around the corner. We need to, you know, so we kind of make a plan for the day. Mm-hmm. And then there'll be stuff that we both need to crack on with separately. Yeah. And then we'll normally have lunch. And then after lunch, it's the stuff that we work on collaboratively a lot of the time. Okay. Unless there's big edits to do, in which case it's very much headphones on and silence.
Are you and Dan similar, or does he specialise in one thing and you specialise in something else?
So we both met together at the production company. Mm-hmm. My job was to produce the R&B show and the hip hop show at One Extra, and his job was to produce the drum and bass show and the dance hall show.
Oh wow.
So okay. We like worked alongside each other. Basically, we both worked very late nights on different nights of the week. Mm-hmm. But we did the same job. We were both producers. But I think when you do that kind of a job, you work out like what your strengths are and what things that you really love doing. So my strengths are definitely with people and with talent, and developing those ideas around that talent, writing in their voices. I've got loads of podcast experience doing that kind of thing.
Yeah.
He is very technically talented. He's a musician, so he makes music for all of the podcasts that we make.
Wow.
Yeah, he's incredible. It's so mad to watch. I'll just be like, oh, here's a couple of references. And he just potters around with his little thing and he's got his headphones on literally for about 15 minutes. He's
and
like,
you let me this? And you let me pay for my music on Fiverr, Amy.
You never told me. We could have made you some music.
I'm joking.
Listen, you don't ask, you don't get.
That's very true. Yeah, that's
so, yeah,
true.
But he also looks after all the videography stuff. He basically built the studio.
Wow.
I was in charge of like aesthetics. Mm-hmm. So I bought I ordered the furniture and like made it feel like how I wanted it to look. He was in charge of all of the kit. Mm-hmm. He runs, when we record stuff in the studio, he very much runs the studio. If I ever get like a dud recording through Riverside or something, he fixes it. Like
what's a dud recording for the
God, you know,
the audio is just really bad, muffled.
Not even muffled, you know, like when someone's had like an aircon on in the background and you couldn't hear it through Riverside. Or the mic on there, they've accidentally used the mic on the AirPods. Sounds like it's been recorded for a loaf of bread. It's terrible. Yeah. He like fixes it, he'll sharpen it up, he cleans, basically runs in after me and fixes all like things.
I needed Dan back in the day.
Everyone,
you know, there was one
Dan in their life.
There was one time in the old studio, one of the episodes, I'll try and put it in the show notes, we recorded during a Brazilian World Cup game, and it was like a carnival atmosphere where we used to record.
Yeah.
And like to say that, like, it was just like banging and drums and stuff while the recording was going on, it actually doesn't come out anywhere near as bad as I thought it would.
Yeah.
But still, when you listen, you're like, I can hear the party in the background.
Yeah. It's the worst, isn't it? Like, yeah. I remember once, so one of the podcasts I make with Josh Smith, it's called Rain, and his guests are often, we started it in the pandemic, his guests are often in America.
Oh, wow.
They're in LA. They're big, like, the majority of his guests are, like, big Hollywood A-listers.
Oh, wow.
So you get them wherever you can get them. Like, they're on, you know, they're in an airport, we'll take it, it's fine, you know, and I'll make it work. But I remember there's this one, and we never stopped talking about it. There was like she's at her house, and I think she's sitting next to the window, she's in LA, and there's a guy with a grass blower or a leaf blower in the background, and he just keeps turning up at various points in the episode. And so we had to make a joke of it in the intro in the end, because... Yeah. I was like, Josh, I can't get rid of all of this. And obviously when we started, it was fine. But it's like halfway through the podcast, I can't really then jump in and be like, excuse me, can you tell that bloke outside to just not do his job for a bit?
Was it live? Or could you have edited that though?
Well, like...
You just lose the flow.
Yeah. And I think they were really into it with like some quite deep conversation. It was actually June 2020. We were recorded.
Okay.
So there was a lot of conversation around the Black Lives Matter movement and George Floyd. And I was like, I'm not going to just jump in here and be like, hey, sorry, can you know, it does kill off, you know, what can be a very special and meaningful conversation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I try not to interrupt ever, actually, unless it's like dire.
So and that was going to be my next question. I've got so many questions, by the way.
Sorry, I talked so much.
This is good. So my next question is going to be, do you ever interrupt? And you say very rarely.
Very rarely. So in studio environments, if I can catch the presenter's eye, it's kind of easy just to get them to pause or just be, we just need to adjust something. Or, you know, you've, in a studio environment, people get very comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden.
Yeah.
So you're just going to move your, just going to adjust the mic, you know. No, I try not to, particularly down the line. It's really hard for people to get the flow back again if you interrupt them.
I've had many a take here in the studio, so I know what you're on about. And then like in the post, cutting it and making it look natural, it can definitely be a ball ache. My next question was going to be, you've mentioned there that Josh Smith has people on like in other countries, that I'm a big believer in. I need to be in the studio. I need to be able to touch your leg. Not that I'm going to do that, but like I need to be able to like feel the emotion and get the energy in person. Like, how is it, I suppose, producing an episode with one person in the room with you and then somebody across like the other side of the world?
So,
and where are you watching them? Is it on a laptop? Is it on a screen? Like, how are you seeing them?
Well, when we do them remotely, Josh isn't even in the room with me.
He's not even in the room.
Because we started it in the pandemic. Okay. So it was all birthed in 2020 and then we launched in 2021. So even then, we still couldn't do people in person, even if they were in the UK.
Yeah.
I think that really helped with access because... you're not asking people to give up 4 hours of their day to travel across to a studio with them, you know. And it also kept costs down right at the beginning of that podcast. So, it's definitely an art. And he is a very experienced interviewer. He does a lot of covers for all the magazines. So he's very used to being at a junket or down the line on the phone with big celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
And the chances, all the celebs that we did at the beginning, he'd already interviewed before.
So he knew them kind of.
Or he's really memorable.
Yeah.
Everyone loves him. Mm-hmm. It really helps. It really pays to be a nice person. So, you know, if they've had an enjoyable experience of being interviewed by him before, then they're going to come back again.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was... It's not weird. We still do it, actually. We've just done like a series and some of our guests were in Australia. We just did Jill Scott. She was in Australia.
Yeah.
So I think it's all about you get on the line. We all have like a nice chat. How's your day? You know, I'll do the tech stuff and we try and make it like a bit fun.
Yeah.
Because then the person feels relaxed. They're going into, you know, we're very much like, if you swear, it's fine. It's a safe space. Like, we're very chill. If you say something you don't like, we can edit it. If you work yourself up into a circle, I can edit it.
Mm-hmm.
I consider myself to be a fairly decent editor at this point in my career. And I still edit that podcast myself because I really enjoy it.
Yeah.
And you know, we're near to episode 100 now of that podcast. So I've done a lot of editing for him. And so I know the things that he likes and that he doesn't like. And it's better in person. There's no doubt about it. But sometimes it's unavoidable.
But you can and you can make it work.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to go back to, it has not left my mind because I think it's so interesting. You spoke about creativity and creating concepts from scratch.
Yeah.
So as you'll know, we've had like senior creatives on the podcast before, and we've had a lot of people in various creative fields. What does that creative process look like for you? And how do you birth an idea out of thin air?
What, one thing I will say about this is you can't force it. Like, it doesn't come out of nowhere.
Okay.
If someone said to me, sit down and think of an idea, I can't do it.
Okay.
There's no way. So for me, it's definitely collaboration, conversation. Quite a lot of the time, people will come to me with like a title or a concept, or, you know, like, we want to do this,
mm-hmm.
and we want it to be aimed at these people, and we want it to kind of be about this.
Mm-hmm.
So then I'll sit down and be like, right, okay, so where does this, you know, where does this begin? Like, and kind of suss out from there. I think that's the bulk of my job. I'm trying to think of an example that I can give you, because at the moment I've got so much in development, so I can't talk about it.
No, I completely understand.
But with Josh, for example, that's a really good example because it's really established now. I know him because his manager, Hannah, also looks after Kem. Met her on Love Island,
mm-hmm.
and then she messaged me after that winter series saying, I've got another client who wants to make a podcast. Would you be up for a meeting? I was like, yeah, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went for this meeting, and it was the last meeting all of us had before the lockdown came in.
Wow.
He was working at a magazine,
mm-hmm.
and he wanted to do a podcast of interviews. And at the time, I think we were going to do something that was based around a book, but it didn't end up being that. It ended up being like these incredible interview podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
And he just knew that he wanted to interview big celebrities. It was really funny, actually, because I remember we had a conversation about who the potential sponsors could be.
Mm-hmm.
We were like, it could probably be like an airline or something because, you know, these guests will be all over the world. So an airline would be really good. And then like 3 months later, we were like, an airline.
No.
Like, obviously, no one was allowed to fly anywhere. We were like, an airline. Yeah, that started out as one thing. And he just had no idea how to format it. He was just like, I just know that I want to talk to celebs and I want to call it Rain and I want it to be about being the king or queen of your own life. Mm-hmm. I was like, right, okay, cool. So let's look at like the narrative arc. And to be honest, it's developed way out of what it was.
Mm-hmm.
It's now like Josh knows the drill. And then we always basically finish on the same question.
Okay.
He knows how long it needs to be. He knows where we hit before we get to the break. And then like basically where it goes from there.
Okay.
But we did have a real strict format to start with.
And then as you grow into it, you kind of adapt it. And I suppose, yeah, he just naturally knows what will work well in the podcast. And he just goes with what he thinks best.
Yeah. And he was not nervous at the beginning because he'd done loads of interviews before. But this is the first time it would be like in a podcast format rather than a print format. And he was like, oh, God, I'm so excited. And now he's very like, yeah, this is great. You know, it's become his thing.
Mm, and it sounds great with Josh. How would you... or how do you manage when you're working with like co-producers or managers and there are creative differences? So they want you to go in one direction, but it kind of doesn't align with the brief maybe that you've got or where you see maybe they should be talking about something.
I mean, that does happen in the creative process all the time. I think it's about finding a solution. Like my golden rule is never like kick up a stink about something unless you've got like, unless you're willing to offer a solution.
Yeah.
Like,
oh God, that's such a good bar. I agree.
Like, don't come in and be like, no, you can't do that without being giving an alternative.
Yeah.
And it really frustrates me when people do that to me. And
happens in my personal life all the time.
Yeah.
My friends will moan about a booking, a reservation. And then when it comes to, all right, where should we go?
Yeah.
They don't offer any solution.
Don't come then, babes. Don't come. So, yeah, I think, like, always be willing to come with some sort of solution if there is, like, a problem. And also, I think a lot of things, like, we're all creatives and everyone, like, thinks that their idea is the best a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's like, let's take a bit of your idea and we'll take a bit of your idea and, like, let's see how we can develop that. I used to work with a presenter who would have terrible ideas.
Yeah.
Awful. In radio, mm-hmm. would come up with the worst, cheesiest, like off-brand ideas. I would be like, yeah, all right, okay, cool. I'd do it over email because if they caught me on the hop, I'd just have to be like, yeah, maybe let's brainstorm that one. But I would always be like, yeah, we could use that guest and maybe that idea. And then why don't we why don't we try and do it like this? Because then we could tie it in with that person and then they'll promote it and like try and give them the sell so that they've kind of thought that they came up with the idea, even though they didn't.
Yeah, I hear that.
So the answer is manipulation.
Amy, you mentioned the fact that you obviously went freelance and then you started your own studio. To anybody who's potentially in this space, is it typical for people to be freelancers or do they typically like work for an agency, work for a brand?
I think it's probably about 50-50.
Okay.
Because I'm so old that...
No, you're not. You're 23.
When I started out, the big jobs were like at the BBC. Mm-hmm. Podcasting was a thing, but it wasn't huge. Mm-hmm. So I was making radio for a long time. And the only way to do that was to work for an independent production company or for the broadcaster. So if you work for, you know, Capital or the BBC or whoever. Now, there's so much commercial podcast work available. Like, I think that, I don't know the stats. I'm literally pulling this out of thin air. But I reckon 50% of like these indies now... Mm-hmm. It's all young people,
yeah,
like making their own way. And like when I started in like the, I guess the audio spaces, there was a finite number of hours. Yeah. It was like, if you didn't win that 1 hour on Radio 1 or One Extra that you bid for, then there's no other hours. Like there's no other place to put this,
yeah,
and get paid for it. Whereas now it's like, if you take an idea to a broadcaster and they don't like it, then you can go and make it with someone else.
Yeah,
someone 100%. Else will pay for your brilliant idea.
Yeah.
And so it's quite beautiful, but then it has meant that some spaces have become very oversaturated.
Don't I know it?
So, yeah, I mean, I don't think if it hadn't been for like that sort of exponential growth of podcasts, I don't think we would have made our company when we did. Mm-hmm. But I also think that we probably would have found a way to be doing our own thing one way or another, whether it's putting it through someone else's company or...
Okay, no, I hear that. And then for anybody who's potentially looking to make the leap, start their own company, what would your advice be to them?
Get someone who knows how to start a company with them as your business partner.
Okay.
My business partner, Dan, does all the business stuff.
Okay.
I'm very like, yeah, cool, that'd be great.
Yeah.
And he is very good at the... Like, he made the website, he, like, registered the company, like...
Ideas woman and his action man.
No, because he's also got really good ideas.
Oh, okay,
as well.
Okay, cool.
Like,
cool,
he's
cool.
Made some, like, mad stuff lately. I can't talk about it, but I'll show you. Mm. He just goes away and just makes things. And he's like, oh, I just made this at the weekend. And I'm like, but you have two children, like...
Wow.
And I was like, watched a film. Personally, for me, I wouldn't be able to deal with the pressure of doing something like that by myself, like mm-hmm. that whole responsibility. Mm-hmm. I like that we have like a responsibility to one another. Mm-hmm. He would say that I'm good at like having conversations and bringing things in. Mm-hmm. And I would say that he does everything.
Yeah.
My mum, to the point where my mum's been like, what do you actually do here? So yeah, work with people that you really trust. And if you want to do it alone, then... That's great. You're really brave and I'm proud of you. Maybe, you know, reinforce yourself with good other people around you who can work for you if something happens. Mm-hmm. But also it's like the businessy side of things, like an accountant and all the other bits, like get those people on side.
Make sure that you have those people in your life.
Yeah.
And then you mentioned the fact that like the way you were able to get Josh was through, you know, him and Kem sharing the same manager.
Yeah.
For somebody who potentially needs to win clients because they're going out alone, what would be your advice? Like how would they go about winning those clients?
Well, I think the thing with Josh is it wasn't like a win. It was like a conversation. Like, can you help
natural,
us develop this?
Organic.
And I was like, yeah, I've got some time.
Mm.
I think I'm very much like a yes person, maybe too much so, in that I will be like, yeah, we can give that a go. We can try that. And so a lot of the things, even now, it will start with a conversation and me kind of helping people to format things in a certain way without being like, you need to pay me.
Yeah.
It's a conversation and I'm not a gatekeeper. Mm-hmm. You could work with anyone or find this information on the internet. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's of benefit to me or my company for me to be like, yeah, I'll help you, but you need to, you know, I'll have a meeting with you, but you need to pay me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it works like that. It all It'll all come back around.
It all works itself out in the long run.
Yeah, and I never feel like I've given somebody something for free.
Yeah.
Because I'm just literally just helping you to mould it.
I hear you.
It's probably not a great business business plan, is it?
It served you okay, though.
Yeah.
So.
Just be nice. Just be nice. Have, like, normal conversations. And, you know, if people come to you, that's a privilege.
100%. It validates kind of that you're doing something right.
Every time someone comes to me and says, oh, I love what you're doing, or I saw this, or someone else recommended, I think, God, that is so nice.
Mm. I mean, it is.
Yeah,
and you're very helpful, can I just say, from personal experience.
Thanks.
It's been great.
Because the other feedback I get from people is that I'm very direct.
But I think...
I think it's a polite term for rude.
No, I don't think it is. I think people only say that when they're not willing to grow. And I think that, like, if you're open to the feedback, it's not direct. It's just you're improving someone. That's how I look at it. Anyway, like, someone actually told me this recently at work, that I take criticism very well. I don't know what that says about me. I might get criticized a lot. But when I'm getting feedback about this podcast and, you know, ideas, I just think about it as, oh, yeah, this is something else I can add to my arsenal. Like, I never look at myself as, like, the finished product. And
that's
this
so
podcast
good.
Will never be the finished product. Do you know what I mean?
Nothing is it?
So I would never look at it as direct, basically. I think, yeah.
It's funny, though, because I think I'm the opposite. And that's something I'm still really learning. When we have, like, a fail, I take it really hard. Mm-hmm. I'm really, really not good at taking an L. When it happens, even yesterday, I had one thing and it set me off.
Mm.
And Dan literally had to talk me off a ledge. I was like, really? Well, I can't do my job. I'm terrible at this. And he was like, what is going on? But, you know, like, there'll just be like one or two things and they happen at the same time. And then, you know, I was like, well, that's it then. Gonna have to quit. And I think those moments will always happen in your career. And
100%.
Yesterday for me, it was so tiny. It was the tiniest thing. And then we were like working on this document together and I was like, just delete the whole thing. Just delete it.
Mm.
And he was like...
Take a deep breath.
He's like, so tolerant of me. Yeah. He was like, let's go downstairs. We'll just get some air. I was like, okay.
So no, but on that point, when you have a setback, what is your approach to overcoming that setback?
First of all, for me, it would be like an immediate meltdown.
Okay. Better out than in. Let it out.
Yeah. Or I'll be like angry.
Mm-hmm.
Once I've processed that, I think it's about what have we learned from this? What can we take from this? What have we done that we could repurpose and use somewhere else?
Mm-hmm.
I don't like wasting things. And what do we know for next time? Like, we're a new company. So when we pitch for work and we don't win it, it does hurt. But also, we're a new company and people don't really know
who we are
or they've not worked with us before. And so they've gone with someone they've worked before. Mm. Like, it's inevitable that that's going to happen.
Do you know what? I had a previous guest, the episode has just come out. Her name's Maria. And she just said that everything happens for a reason. And yeah, that she doesn't look at setbacks as setbacks. And, you know, we talk about glass half full or glass half empty. She just talks about her cup as always being full. And if you're not getting an opportunity, it's because it wasn't right for you. Like, maybe they weren't the right employer. And it's about taking the learns from that.
Yeah.
So when the right opportunity does come, you grab it with both hands. So I think maybe that's an outlook that you can adopt.
Yeah, I definitely need. Dan is much more level-headed than I am. And I am a very emotional being. And I know that can be difficult for people to, you know, and so those are things, like you were saying, nothing is the finished product.
Mm-hmm.
Neither am I.
Mm.
And I'm, you know, working on how to, what I can do really well is make a podcast or help someone with a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
What is new to me is the whole, like, running a business, the sort of jeopardy of what work is going to come in, what clients are going to be there. And actually that level of responsibility, is a bit, you know, that can be overwhelming at times. I do feel pressure. But then in big, like, TV environments or podcast environments with a lot of people, I can run the room. It doesn't faze me at all. It's really weird.
It's just a bit of the unknown, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's about getting comfortable in uncomfortable situations,
yeah,
is what I'd say. One other thing I wanted to ask about whilst it's in my mind. So you spoke about the fact that, and I think we can see it in the world, the podcast industry is becoming, like, quite oversaturated. You know, there's a lot of podcasts, even me, you know, I'm out here trying to make it. What's an emerging trend that you're seeing in the podcast industry? Positive, negative?
I think we're past the point of everyone just trying to make a podcast and thinking that it's a conversation that you just record and then stick on the internet. I'm really hoping that we're past that because that was a time, like it was like a joke that every white man in Hackney in his bedroom like made a podcast with his thoughts because he thought the world needed to hear his thoughts.
Yeah.
Everybody wanting to be Scroobius Pip. I think, I tell you what, I think like the brands wanting to make big podcasts and make it their own thing, like the Dish podcast is 10 out of 10. It's amazing.
Never heard of it. What's it about?
It's a Waitrose podcast.
Okay.
And it's Nick Grimshaw and a chef called Angela.
Okay.
And they have a celebrity guest and she cooks dinner and they all sit around and have a chat while she cooks the dinner and then they eat the dinner together.
Amazing.
It is so good. The guests are amazing. Like, I want to hear Stanley Tucci eating dinner, like, and having a chat.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, I think maybe they're in series 3 or series 4 now. It's excellent. But that's, like, big budget, full scale, you know. And I hope to see more of that where brands are, you know, going to really take ownership of something and be willing to develop things that are their content.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of stuff I think is really fun. And also the like idea behind that, it's imaginative. It's not just necessarily two people sitting down having a chat and, you know, no shade.
I'm No,
it's like the majority of my podcasts are like this. But, you know, like having the space. And to be honest, it's the space and a lot of the time the budget to be able to do something.
The budget. I don't know about the budget.
Oh, don't I know about the budget? Yeah. Like 9 times out of 10, that's the thing that will like halt the project. Because if there's no money to pay for it, then how does a company like mine survive?
Yeah, of course. Of course.
So, yeah, finding the budget, that's always the... Who's paying for this?
Yeah.
It's a good fun game.
I hear you. What is the most stressful thing about your job?
People thinking that they know how to do my job better than I do, that don't do my job.
Okay.
If you do my job, then by all means, weigh in. If you don't do my job...
It's like fans at a football match trying to tell the manager how to... Oh, you need to play this player. You should press this, that and the other. Yeah.
You know, like when you go to the football and someone behind you goes, hit it.
Yeah.
Like, all right.
Score a goal.
Yeah.
Oh shit, Sherlock. Like,
when I watched the World Cup final, I was on a hen do. And so we watched it in a hotel with other guests in the hotel.
Yeah.
There's a guy behind me like doing up commentary and I was like,
please stop. Yeah.
Hit it. It was a lot of hit it.
Yeah. What is the most rewarding aspect of your job?
Oh, I love working with talent. For me, like, it's when someone has been like, I didn't think I could do that. Or they do something and they're like, I've come such a long way. Or I was working with a comedian. She's a stand-up comic and a paleoanthropologist. Super smart, super, super sharp.
Mm-hmm.
And we would, like, be going through these, like, very heavy, detailed science scripts. And I'd be like, well, why don't you just try and like push up the intonation there a little bit? Why don't you make that into a question? And she'd do it. She'd be like, oh my God,
yeah.
That is amazing. And then again, it's like, it's really selfish, isn't it? It's like validation for me. I love it. She was like, oh my God, I hadn't thought of that. I said, take that with you when you're doing your next piece to camera.
Yeah.
She's like, yeah, I will. That's amazing. I get the most joy out of making people the best performer or the best presenter they can possibly be.
Can't wait for my feedback after this. Any productivity hacks?
Write a list. Okay. Always write a list.
Don't just write the list, complete the list, right?
Sometimes, if you want to really treat yourself, I do this quite a lot. Write a list and put some things on it that you've already done so you can cross them off because it really gives you momentum to like crack on with the things.
Yeah, like a nice head start.
Yeah. We'll quite often do a thing and I'll say to myself, right, at 2 o'clock, I'm going to stop and I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. And you can use like online. So I used to use this thing called Toggle, which was like a web page thing that would help me like time things.
Yeah.
And like... then I knew how long I'd spent on one project and another project. But yeah, it's definitely like lists, organization, make sure all your files are named properly as well.
I'm so bad at that.
Folders.
Yeah.
Like organization, number one. My business partner, his folders, they give me nightmares. Look at that. I was like, you're going to lose everything one day.
That's what I mean. Do you know what? The other day, I started trying to like organize my podcast stuff and making folders. I was just like... I'm going to drag 10 files a day because there's no way I could do it all at once. It's just like too overwhelming. Yeah. You've got to just break it down into small
chunks.
Sometimes
just start into organize it into one big folder and then from there, that big folder, split it out from there and do it that way.
Okay, nice. With the podcast that you work on or just podcasts in general, are there any essential tools you're like, every podcaster needs to use this or upload on that? Is there anything that comes to mind?
No, I don't think so. I would just say when you're recording, try and get the recording in the best possible quality that you can get it in the first place, because any sort of post-production you have to do on the quality of the audio like degrades the audio. It's like it's making it less. I guess it's like, I'm trying to think of an analogy. It's like using like a cheese grater on it to make it sound better, but really you're just carving bits of it away in different places.
Yeah.
So like the setup, I think I would say if you're recording remotely with people, well carpeted spaces or well furnished spaces. I've done all sorts of mad things, like got Jessica Lynn under a washing line once before to record a podcast.
So why?
Because she was in a room with a wooden floor and I was like, it's really echoey, mate. Can we...
Won't you hold my washing machine?
Basically that. That's what she sang to me. I've done like mad stuff. And yeah. With Josh, he has all these like big Hollywood A-listers as his guests. I'm like, would you mind just and I get them to do like, I have to get them to do like mad stuff.
But you just have
Can you prop your laptop on 5 books for me because the fan is making too much noise?
Wow.
Can you go and get some headphones? I remember Amy Lou Wood ran to the shop and bought some headphones because she didn't have any. Wow. Well, she couldn't find them. That's always a classic. They can't find the headphones or the headphones.
House is too big. What a first world problem.
Right.
And on that note, like to any aspiring producers who maybe they don't see themselves as like creative, what would your advice be to them to like spark some creativity?
Oh, I think everyone is creative in some respect. I don't think there's anyone in the world that doesn't have creativity in them,
but they might not think that.
Yeah, but then I think I saw myself as a creative person.
Okay.
And
maybe change your perception.
Yeah, like also, you know, it doesn't have to be like a world, you know, breaking idea. World breaking? That's not
groundbreaking.
Right, groundbreaking idea.
Yeah.
Like it literally.
Don't break the world, please.
I was going to say I was trying to go for like set the world on fire / groundbreaking.
Yeah.
You know, like it doesn't have to be like a million-dollar idea. It doesn't have to be, like, one of the best things that someone said to me, and I know that this is, like, a famous quote, but I couldn't tell you who it was by, is that no idea is a new idea. Like, it's always an embellishment of another idea or it's something that someone's done before.
Yeah.
Just make it your own. Mm-hmm. Think about the things that you care about. Mm-hmm. What do you want to listen to?
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I always start with any development of any podcast, I'm like, who do you want to listen to this and why would they listen to it? And then you build it out from there.
Yeah, I think it's something that we've heard a lot on this podcast already, this series. It's like, you can be the best you. Nobody else can be better at being you than you.
Yeah.
So use that as your USP and your superpower and just lean into wherever that takes you. And I think, yeah, beautiful things do happen.
Yeah, just have a nice time.
Do you enjoy what you do?
Yeah, I love it. I can't believe that this is my job.
Okay.
When I used to listen to the radio as a teenager, like we'd be in like GCSE textiles, me and my best friend Terry, shout out Terry. we would sit there and we'd like listen to the radio and we'd be listening to Scott Mills and we'd be like, oh, he's so lost. I work with him.
Oh, wow, yeah. You're living the dream.
We used to listen to hip hop all the time. We also did GCSE dance and we would always like take over the CD player and just put our hip hop CDs on.
Mm.
Then I got to produce the One Extra Hip Hop Show for 5 years.
Yeah.
I am doing the things that tiny little me thought was never ever possible.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, you can't do this job unless you know someone. Like I wish I could be like this person. Every time I met someone who'd been into Radio 1, I'd be like, what was it like? Who did you meet? What did the people look like? I was obsessed with it.
They're just people.
Yeah, they're just normal people. Guess what? And then I'd get there and I'd meet all these people who I'd been listening to or, you know, the producers that they'd been talking about on air. I'd be like, hello.
Yeah.
Hi.
Yeah.
And yeah, I can't believe it.
Amazing answer. It sounds like you've got a lot on. You're a very busy woman. How do you unwind?
I love to spend time with my friends. We like doing silly things.
Okay.
I like being outside, going on walks, going to festivals, going to people's houses and eating their food. I do like to exercise.
Yeah.
Like I go spinning and swimming and stuff.
You just said a lot of things there that sound
I
like,
know, but I was like trying to do it without making it sound like I get pissed all the time.
Yeah. Do you know what? We had a guest on here before. I was like, how you unwind? He was just like, wine. That was one word answer, wine.
It is true.
And then that was it.
It's true. Like, I had a really, really full-on day on Wednesday of this week. I had a pilot, a really big pilot that we shot in the morning.
Mm.
And then the afternoon, we had a massive pitch. And I text my friend, Ro, and she was coming around for dinner.
Episode one, shout out.
Yeah, I didn't know if you wanted the connection or not.
I mean, we'll see how many people are paying attention and listening to all the episodes, won't we?
Exactly. And I was like, is tonight a night to have a glass of wine? She was like, I think it is, mate.
Yeah.
She was like, I was one step ahead of you. I'm on my way to the shop. So, you know, sometimes it is nice just to sit and have a glass of wine in the garden. And like, she let me like unpack everything of my day and offload it onto her.
Mm.
Like, this happened, then this happened, then this happened. She was like, and what happened in this bit of the pitch? And what did they say about this? And what was your response to this? And then I showed her the entire deck. And she was like, mate, you smashed it. Well done.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, nice reassurance.
Sometimes you need to unload.
And she gets it as well, because her job is similar in the sense that she pitches quite a lot and she makes really good decks. And
what I took from that is unload over a glass of red.
It was rosé, actually.
Oh, rosé.
The sun was still out.
Okay,
so it was rosé, but probably will switch to red. At the time. But yeah, a nice drink over, you know, a friend to sometimes just offload, especially when you've had a stressful day.
I hear you. To anybody who's looking to get into the broadcasting space, the producer space, just this entertainment space, shall we say, in general, what would your best piece of advice be for them?
Don't be a dick.
Okay.
Be persistent and be helpful. But like, if someone has not responded to you on the second time, don't keep emailing them every other day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're obviously busy, mm-hmm, and they're less likely to respond to you if you keep hassling. I think being nice to people, it's funny I should say this because I'm sure there are people that I've encountered in my career who would say that I'm not nice. But I think being nice to people and being pleasant and good to work with is really, really important.
Yeah.
I had jobs where I've been forced to not be nice, but I've been put in a position where I've had to deliver bad news, or I've had to do things that
it was
not nice for the other person.
Yeah, of course.
And they're like my biggest career regrets. They're the things that keep me up at night, but there's nothing I can do about that. And I was just doing a job at the time. So I just try to make sure I'm nice, that everyone around me is having a good time. And yeah, you want to make realistically, if we all step back, no one wants to work, do they?
No.
So let's just make it nice. Let's have a good time.
Yeah. And then finally, just look into the future. Where do you see Amy in 5 and 10 years?
It's difficult because I really love the hands-on element of being a producer.
Mm-hmm.
And so being an exec producer, or like running my company and having a team of like loads of producers, which is like, it's obviously the ambition to have like a company with lots of producers. I'm not going to be able to help myself, I think, without
getting involved.
And I don't want to like be annoying people, like just leave me alone, stop micromanaging me. I just want to get on with my project. So I think it would probably be like an expansion of our company, loads of people that I trust and love, and they love me and we all love each other. It's really nice. All like working on projects that we all love,
yeah.
But maybe still having like my own like creative output as part of that company. Like I would still like to be producing stuff,
yeah,
which might be a mad thing to say. I still love editing.
No, that's fine. If you want to be on the front line, like do what makes you happy.
I did a project last year. And we had an editor, and I hated having an editor. I just wanted to do it myself. I was like, it'll be quicker, guys, if you just let me do this. They were like, no, we've already paid the editor. And I was like, oh, okay.
Amy, what a conversation. We're not done yet. We're not done yet. Okay. Quick fire round.
Okay.
For the listeners, work from home or work from the office?
Office.
Money or happiness?
Happiness.
Favourite day of the week?
Tuesday.
That's so random. Time in a group or time alone?
Ooh, bit of both.
Would you rather travel to the past or to the future?
I'd rather stay right here.
In the present?
Yeah.
Oh, I like that. Favourite book?
Let me come back with something cool on that.
This is supposed to be quick fire.
Yeah, I know, sorry. Ruined it. Do you know, I do quick fires with a lot of the podcasts that I make and they never end up quick fire. Everything I read is trash. Sorry.
That's what, okay, we're going to call the book Everything I Read is Trash by Amy. Who has it easier, men or women?
Men.
Time of the day you feel most creative?
It's about 2 o'clock.
PM or AM?
PM. or it'll be like 11 PM just because I'm trying to go to sleep.
All right. Best platform for promoting podcasts?
What do you mean, like social platforms?
I'm not really sure when I put this in what I was expecting, so I'm just going to move past it.
I'm trying to think of a book.
Who would be your dream podcast host to work with?
I literally can't do it. I keep thinking about Dan Levy because my friend saw him in Shoreditch House the other night.
As in the Tottenham owner?
No, not him.
Oh, okay. I was about to say, it's so random.
No. Even though I live in Tottenham, it's not him. Okay. It's the one, have you ever watched Schitt's Creek?
No, I haven't, unfortunately.
Have you ever watched American Pie?
Yeah.
You know,
the dad.
What's his face? His dad, yeah, the eyebrows. Jim Levy.
Yeah.
It's his son, Daniel, and they wrote this sitcom together called Schitt's Creek, which is a really amazing comedy. And he is wonderful.
That's it. We're taking that. Dan Levy.
No, it's not. Doesn't make me sound cool.
That's fine. Do you know what you do? You sound like you, though. All right. This has been great. We do have a closing tradition on the podcast. And basically, you know, we've spoken about a lot today. Your career from broadcast journalist into producer. Knowing what you know now. And with everything you've experienced, what advice would you give your 16-year-old self? And would you still be doing the same thing?
When I was 16, I think I had no idea what I was going to do. I think I genuinely thought I would end up like being a receptionist or... It's really bad to say, but I just don't think I had like ambition.
So what advice would you give yourself?
Like, I don't really think too far ahead into the future. As you might be able to tell. I can't make a decision on anything. And I think I was like that from a kid. And I think I would just say to myself, you know, you're going to have a great time. So relax. No one cares about what you've got in your GCSEs. They're literally, your GCSEs are just a stepping stone to your A-levels. Your A-levels are just a stepping stone to your degree. And your degree, well, you had a nice time.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd love older me, like 67-year-old me, to come and give 37-year-old me advice now.
Yeah.
Mid-30s you is like having a nice time. So, and like you've fulfilled so many dreams and just chill out. Enjoy every single moment because I don't want to say like you don't know when it might all be over because for me, I'm still very much in the midst of all the good stuff.
Yeah. Okay, chill out. I've taken that.
Chill out. Don't be a dick.
And then would you still be doing the same thing?
I really don't know. I would love to, but I think it was a particular set of circumstances that led me here. Mm-hmm. I feel really fortunate. I get quite emotional when I talk about this because I don't think I ever thought I was capable of the things that I've done. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that I've done like incredible things or like I've achieved everything. But
you know, you're happy with
I'm
what you've
really
achieved.
Happy.
You're proud.
I'm really proud of myself.
And I think on that note, to those people who or listeners who don't think that they can, what would you say to them?
Oh, mate, don't sell yourself short. Like, just give it a go. Try to be open to things. I've done so many things that was like, oh, this is a bit random, but yeah, I'll give it a go anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I'm just going to finish by saying this. I've been told that you miss 100% of the chances you don't take. And also, like, when it comes to opportunities, I've said this before, but the closed mouth doesn't get fed. So if you don't ask for an opportunity, like it will never come, you know, people aren't here to give handouts. So I think it's just a roundabout way of saying get stuck in. And the harder you work, the luckier you'll be. Because I think a lot of people, even myself, I say, oh, I've been lucky, I've been this, I've been that. But it all stems from somewhere. So work hard and the luck will follow. That's a quote from myself.
Take that. It's a great quote.
And yeah, and with that, this has been a wonderful episode, Amy. Thank you so much. So, we'll be back for more episodes. This has been another episode of What My Best Friend Does. If you didn't know, now you know.